Hello and welcome to the Business of Sustainability podcast, the latest show created in partnership with Future Plus and City AM. My name is Alex Smith and I'm joined today not by my usual co-host, Mike Penrose, but by the brilliant Polly Milne, Project Director at Future Plus. We're here today for a very special International Women's Day episode and we are so pleased to be joined by Tessa Wealdon, who is Head of Female Participation and Growth at the England and Wales Cricket Board. Just before we sort of start and we ask Tessa to introduce herself, I think it's probably important to give a little bit of context around the ECB. We at Future Plus have been working with them now for a little over a year. We continue to work with them on their supply chain and looking at all of the things that Future Plus concentrates on, so environment, climate, social, diversity, inclusion, and economic. But what we've seen is some really interesting work coming out from the ECB around their inclusion and as Tessa will continue to explain around female participation in the sport and what that means and what it brings to the wider world. And it's such an important topic. I mean, Polly, I don't know if you want to talk a little bit on why we're having that conversation today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Alex. I think it'd be fascinating to hear what Tessa has to say and to hear her talk through some of the amazing work that the ECB has been doing with women's cricket and promoting women and girls to play cricket. It's so translatable into a business context, which is obviously, you know, very much at Future Plus what we're focused on. But there are so many parallels. Not only do we work with sporting organisations such as the ECB, but you know, there are so many crossovers and overlaps in terms of the importance of inclusion, but also, of course, diversity and equity. The way we see that feeding through into what it means to be a sustainable business, just in terms of so many areas, you know, attracting employees and customers, really seeing a business functioning in an inclusive way. Creating a diversity of employees, which brings a richness to a business, is something that we see time and time again. And it'll be fascinating to see, to hear Tessa talking about how that translates into sport, the importance of that in a sporting context. So really excited to hear what she has to say today.
Yeah, me too. And so without further ado, thank you, Tessa, for joining us today. Perhaps we could start with you giving us a quick intro to your role and your background at the ECB.
Of course. Thank you, Alex. Lovely to meet you and you as well, Polly. So yeah, my name's Tessa Wealdon. I'm Head of Female Participation at the England and Wales Cricket Board. I've actually worked for the ECB for the last 19 years. I joined back in 2005. I've spent pretty much the whole of that time working in and around grassroots cricket and recreational club cricket, both on the revenue side, so programmes to support the development and growth of club cricket and league cricket, but also on the capital side. So for 8 years, I managed the operations around building new and refurbishing clubhouses, pavilions, building new cricket grounds, investing in schools and things like that. So more latterly, since December 2020, I've worked in the female participation space, very much around transforming the game for women and girls. And I'm sure we'll touch on this later, but with the goal and the ambition to make cricket a truly gender balanced sport. I'm not a cricketer. I don't play cricket. I am probably used to be far better hockey player than I am now, but still try and keep as fit and as healthy as I can do. And I'm also a mum to a 12-year-old son called Ted. So yeah, hopefully that gives a little bit of context. And I'm coming to you from Lords Cricket Ground today, but I live up in the northwest in Chester. So basically travel England and Wales and go where the job needs me to go.
Amazing. And as someone that worked in sailing for about 10 years, I was described my skill level as enthusiastic, if not fully skilled. So I appreciate hugely working in a sport that you don't necessarily play to a high level. Brilliant. Thank you so much, Tessa. And in this episode, to celebrate this year's International Women's Day theme of Inspire Inclusion, we'll discuss the ECB's strategies and policies to make, as Tessa just said, the cricket the most inclusive sport in the country. So Polly, I'll hand over to you for the first question.
Thanks, Alex. And Tessa, lovely to meet you. Thanks so much for being with us here today. We've so enjoyed working with the ECB over the last 18 months as part of their supply chain programme. It's been a fantastic experience and really great to work with the ECB on this project. The ECB obviously has a huge focus on inclusion in sport, of course, primarily cricket. How important do you think the role of sporting organisations, governing bodies and clubs to ensure sport is as inclusive as possible?
Yeah, thanks, Polly. It's fundamental, ultimately. I think actually it's taken sport, and I will include cricket in that, a little bit of time to realise and figure out the impact and the difference sport can make on people's lives. I think historically people have kind of had the saying sport for sport's sake, that if you play cricket or you play hockey or you play football or you play rugby or you play basketball, whatever sport it is, you mentioned sailing before, there was a clear understanding of the benefits and rewards you got from that sport. From a sporting context, I become a better sailor, I become a better basketball player, I become a better netball. But what I actually think the sea change has been, and where the real difference has come from and will go in the future, is actually the difference that it makes to people's lives. And it's been a bit tricky for sports and national governing bodies to be able to articulate that, both from an evidential point of view, but also to tell those stories. And actually, for the first time in November last year, the ECB published its first ever impact report on behalf of the game. And I think that was a seminal moment of being able to articulate the difference that cricket can make to people's lives, of how we can inspire people and how we can connect communities. And I just thought it would be useful just to touch on a couple of the things, a couple of snippets that people might not necessarily readily understand or associate with the benefits of cricket. So for example, 93% of players agree that cricket helps them to stay fit and healthy. 83% of parents say that their child's confidence can be boosted by taking part in All Stars Cricket and Dynamos Cricket, which I'll touch on later, two national programmes for children aged between 5 and 11. And 3/4 of volunteers say that the experience of volunteering can help them learn new skills and contribute to their local community. So I think with that mindset change, and again, Alex, you touched on it before, you know, we have a goal and an ambition to become the most inclusive team sport in the UK. It's not just about, although it is really important, that boys and girls, men and women can see, you know, that there is a role model and there is a pathway to play for their country, to play for England. But actually, when you look into communities and you put that microscope into urban, diverse communities, rural communities, low socioeconomic communities, that actually you can see the real difference above and beyond the sporting difference that national governing bodies, that other sports can make. So, yeah, in short, you know, if we look to International Women's Day later this week and inspiring inclusion, it's fundamental to what we do. I think we've been good at the past of understanding the benefits, for example, that cricket can have to cricket, but actually it's so much more broader than that. And we will continue, certainly us as a national governing body, to understand that more in the future.
Tessa, that was hugely interesting. And so you said something sort of really important there, I think, which is sometimes when people view sport, they really do see it as the top of the top, the, as you say, that the playing for your country, what are the pathways to get there? But as somebody, again, who really enjoys sports, but doesn't strongly identify as a sports fan necessarily, I love the impact that sport has. And I've seen it through so many different sports, through my kids playing rugby and cricket, through my involvement with sailing, through cycling, and a variety of other things. The additionality that you can get from it for just being a part of it. And I think Absolutely. That's something that sort of people forget sometimes. I think it really, you know, it's so important to bring that to life. You know, women's cricket in particular has, you know, grown incredibly over the past few years. And I think there's been some sold out events with the ECB, and people have really started to understand sort of what it is. I've been to see 2020 with the women, which was amazing. There's nothing I like more from a sporting event than fireworks, cheering, bands and cricket. It was absolutely brilliant. But can you talk us through some of the key strategies that you as a body and the clubs have used to actually get that engagement up and to get people to appreciate and see that wider point of view?
Sure, of course, Alex. And I think it's important to kind of just look at the plotted history a little bit. So there were some seminal moments back in 2014. Was the first time that England women had central contracts. And so within cricket, the England player, both men and women, are centrally contracted. And that was a seminal moment in terms of really kind of the game being serious about investing in and the profile of England women and international women's cricket. So that stems back all the way to 2014. If we look more domestically at professional elite cricket, 2016 was when the Kia Super League was launched. So that was a real seminal moment around, again, the game taking seriously the women's domestic structure. And then in 2017, obviously, we hosted the Women's World Cup, which was absolutely fantastic. And, you know, those are of us that were in the game. But I think more importantly for me, and you touched on it in your question there, that was probably the first time that women's cricket in England and Wales started to bridge what you would call a core audience. It started to infiltrate into the newspaper, started to infiltrate into the news and both social media and broadcast. And that's kind of when you start to think, oh yeah, this could be a game for me. I think very honestly, we probably didn't capitalize on 2017 as much as we should have done, but that's great learnings and we'll take that forward. And we finally get to 2020, and as part of our current strategic plan, which is called Inspiring Generations, the game published its first ever Women and Girls Action Plan, which was very much around making cricket a game that is truly gender balanced. I touched on it before, with women and girls being properly represented across the whole entire game. And it focused on five pillars, and those five pillars were participation, pathway, performance, profile, and people. And so effectively, that's our guiding light at the moment, that action plan. And what I'd like to do is just touch on a couple of those pillars and just talk about them a little bit more. So participation is the one that's closest to my heart. And there were three key objectives within that participation pillar. The first one was to build a strong, inclusive and sustainable club network. The second, to create offers for girls, and so that girls will say cricket is a game for me. And the third one was to bring cricket to more primary and secondary schools. So if we touch on those just very briefly, currently there are 912 cricket clubs across England and Wales that have a girls section, and that is progressively increasing year on year. However, it's still not enough. There are around 2,500 cricket clubs with a girl with a junior section. So what we want to do is keep making sure that girls have the choice to be able to pick up a bat and ball locally to where they live, and that's across the whole of England and Wales. And the ECB invests in a network of women and girls cricket development officers. We split the country up into 38, effectively 38 branches, and we invest in those county cricket boards to employ and deploy a network of women and girls cricket development officers. And they are ultimately at the coalface of making that transformational difference across recreational cricket. And particularly in this week of International Women's Day, over 60% of the women and girls cricket development officers are female. It's one of our most gender balanced workforces. And that's something that I'm really proud of and really wanted to champion when we were setting up that structure. And we work with cricket clubs to look at, the club themselves, the people that are in the club, the people that are making the decisions, their management structure and committee, the coaches, the facilities at that cricket club, to really drive towards building that inclusive and sustainable club network. I touched on All Stars Cricket and Dynamos Cricket before. So All Stars Cricket is for 5 to 8 year olds and Dynamos Cricket for 8 to 11 year olds, and that started back in 2017. And since then, 350,000 children have taken part in All Stars and Dynamos. And we've been working really hard. And, you know, I'm delighted to say that now as a game, 30% of those participants are girls. And that's really important. And the goal there is to give more girls a fantastic fantastic first experience of cricket. And then the key is to keep them hooked and to keep them loving and falling in love with the game so that they continue playing beyond the age of 11. And that's why having that inclusive club network is really important, because then that place feels welcoming to them. And finally, bringing more cricket to primary and secondary schools. You know, it's a really tough arena to get in. The education system is changing, but we really feel that, and particularly to the point that I made before, you know, when cricket, along with its partners, the Lord's Taverners and Chance to Shine, are taking cricket into schools, you know, the difference that we can make to those young people, both in state schools, in schools from low socioeconomic groups, in special education needs and disability schools, we're enriching those young people far more and far beyond just cricket. So that's really important for us as well. Very briefly, just to touch on some of the other kind of major milestones when we look at performance and pathway. In 2020, the regional structure, the women's regional professional structure, built upon the Kia Super League, and that's what's been in place for the last 4 years. Obviously in 2021 we the 100 came to the party, which was absolutely fantastic, and absolutely built upon what you talked about there, Alex, around it was cricket and, you know, you're coming along to watch cricket. It was the first time that you had men and women's cricket within the same arena and at the same time, and given parity in terms of that stage, which was absolutely fantastic. And a lot of the work that I'm doing at the moment, and many of us across the business, are planning towards England and Wales hosting the International Women's T20 World Cup here in 2026. So that's going to be a seminal moment for women and girls cricket, where we can take it to the next level. And I think finally, just from a profile point of view, we have a saying that I coin and use quite often, which is, if you can't see it, you can't be it. And, you know, having you know, international women's cricket on the telly, on Sky, on the BBC, through digital channels, is really important. And we've seen in 2023 compared to 2022, 140% increase in the number of people attending international women's cricket fixtures, which shows there is this connection and this sentiment and feeling towards women's cricket. And, you know, many of that will be on the back of, for example, the Lionesses, but it just feels as if there's this wonderful groundswell of positivity towards women's cricket and women's sport at the moment to build upon. So hopefully, Polly, that covers some of the bases that we've been talking about there.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's so incredible to hear some of those stats and just the progress that's been made. I grew up watching my brothers play cricket and never had that opportunity. And now I've got two daughters and they've both had exposure to cricket and absolutely love it. And they kind of muck in with their male cousins. And it's just so wonderful to see that inclusivity. And just as you said, them thinking cricket is a game for me. It's not
absolutely.
It's great to see. So thank you for that. I think just sort of zooming out a bit from cricket, possibly, what do you feel the future holds more broadly for women in sport?
Yeah, I think it's a real positive time for women's sport. I just listed, you know, or thought about kind of the international events that are coming up, both on home soil and further afield. We've got the Women's Rugby World Cup in 2025. So next year, the Women's Euros. I touched on the Women's Cricket World Cup in 26, the Women's Football World Cup in 27. So I think each of these will progressively offer an opportunity to increase the profile, increase the narrative, and for a broader range of society to kind of take a step back and go, yeah, this is really good. You know, this is something that I want to watch. This is something that I want to tune into. This is something that I want to follow. So I just think it's really positive. Excuse me. I think the accelerated growth that we've seen, for example, on the back of the Lionesses and the wonderful work, you know, now taking place in schools, I think it's going to generate scale. I think scale is still really important. It's the translation of what happens at that international level into the grassroots of those sports. That's what provides that legacy and sustainability. And to your absolute point around your daughters, if they see it on the telly, they believe that they can do it themselves. So I just think that cultural shift in women's sport, and we've got to do that together, you know, cricket, rugby, football, Olympics, Commonwealth Games, winter sports as well, taking place at the moment. So I think the future's bright. I think, you know, commercial partners, broadcasters are coming to the table and now understanding the true value of women's sport. And I think, you know, if I take myself as a, you know, as an executive of a national governing body and other governing bodies, our greatest challenge and our greatest role is to translate that into the grassroots of the game and to ensure that, you know, for example, your daughters can go, this is a sport for me, but more importantly, I can have a career in these sports. You know, that wasn't the case 10 to 15 years ago, whether that be cricket or rugby or football. And I think young girls now, young women now can see themselves as going, you know, when you do careers fairs or your work-based learning, the goal is, and actually one of my friends had this the other day, her daughter went, she's in year 10, you know, what are you going to do for your work-based learning? Well, I'm going to be a professional sportswoman. So I'm going to go and spend a week carrying on training, playing and working hard, if that's okay. And the teacher kind of took a step back, but I just thought that was absolutely fantastic and marks the cultural difference that young girls and young women are today are striving for in their environment with their teachers, their coaches to go, no, that's what I want to do and that's what I want to be. And I just thought that was brilliant. I loved it.
I think one of the other really interesting things I felt more and more over the last years, I've got two teenage boys, I think we're all probably parents of similar age children, is how important it is for them to see me do sport.
Absolutely.
As well. And I don't, you know, I've had to sort of relearn that. I do say I can run fast. And I, you know, I tease them now that I can run further. I mean, I might not be able to beat them on 100 meters, but I could definitely take them on a 10K. But, yeah. but showing, you know, showing that the strength and the ability of me in sport, I think is another, just all these different layers that you need to start to put in and rewrite your own narrative as well.
Absolutely.
As well as sort of this bigger picture stuff. And I think you mentioned before your sort of that bigger ecosystem, and obviously the ECB is at the centre of this huge ecosystem of partners and suppliers and sponsors and organisations that you're working with, schools, you know, the clubs. Are you seeing sort of successful models from other industries or other sports or other clubs that you're able to sort of translate into what you're doing? And can you take that best practice and then I guess the reverse of that, you know, the circular economy of it, then put it back out into the world and sort of show businesses and other sports what they could be doing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm my kind of personal mantra as well as at work is that people often come to me, you know, I'm classed as a subject matter advisor within female participation, but I'm constantly learning, you know, and they say, oh, are you an expert or have you got experts in ED&I? And yes, we do have, but we're constantly learning because society requires us to do that. And there was kind of three examples that I was thinking of. We do a lot of work with women in sport, and we're doing a research piece at the moment, and it's their 40th celebratory year at the moment. And so Women in Sport are a brilliant charity who do a lot of research and insight into kind of the history of women in sport, physical activity across all of the ages. And the piece of work that we're doing with them at the moment is very much connected to the role of women and men coaching girls cricket. And to your point that you touched on before, you know, we need more people. If I touch on the three top barriers to starting a girls section, the first one is lack of players, the second one is facilities, and the third one is people. So we're working with women in sport to really understand, you know, what are the motivations around women giving up their time to give a little bit back to cricket, because that actually is very different to men giving up their time. You know, our lives are generally more kind of complicated, a little bit busier, we take on multiple roles, and so we're looking at the motivations around coaching and coach development, particularly in a generation of women who haven't necessarily been brought up with cricket. Certainly when I was at secondary school, I wasn't allowed to play cricket. It wasn't on the girls' PE curriculum, neither was football or rugby. So actually, and this will be very similar for other sports as well, particularly, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, when there was that delineation between girls' PE and boys' PE, that now we're needing to invite, because they are mums, they're mums of daughters and nieces and etc., to actually come and participate in a sport that they've never participated in before or never volunteered in before. So women in sport is definitely somebody we can learn from. do some work and keep a watchful eye on England netball as well. Their netball, her, and the work they've done with the Well HQ is really important, and I'm a real advocate of that, and that's something that we look at a distance and work closely and keep an eye on. We touched on it before. One of the partners that we are working with is Initial. So last year we went into a partnership with Initial Washroom Hygiene to provide up to 1,000 cricket clubs with free period dignity resources. And so basically where this came from was, as a sport, we wanted to go out and seek a femcare partner. Because of the insights that we'd got around 30% of girls tend to drop out of sport and PE at the onset of adolescence, aligned to the start of their period. And Initial were absolutely brilliant in terms of what we learned from them around their data, their insights, very much from a business point of view. And so what we're doing is, like I said, up to 1,000 cricket clubs with a girls section, free of charge, no charge whatsoever. We're providing in cubicle dispensers along with sanitary products, so sanitary towels, tampons, wipes and bags, and they're fitted inside the toilet cubicles at cricket clubs along with feminine hygiene units, so to get rid of the waste, but really importantly as well, education material, so period myth busting and things like that. So we've been able to learn a lot from Initial in terms of the scale of what they do, but they're a global company, and you know, we've looked at what they've done in Australia and also South Africa and Asia as well, and taken learnings there. And I think the other one that I would draw upon is the work that particularly I've been doing, but colleagues as well, over the last 9 months or so with Metro Bank. So last year we announced Metro Bank as the first ever champion partner of women and girls cricket. And it's actually the first time that women and girls cricket, top to bottom, so from grassroots to international level, has been able to have its own specialist, for want of a better description, commercial partner, which is really, you know, going back to what we were talking about before, just shows the strength and depth that's in women's sport at the moment. And part of that partnership was a commitment to a women and girls club fund. And so I think my learnings there have been, you know, Metro Bank as a bank and as their philosophy put a lot of emphasis on people. So one of the things that we're working on together is around investing in and supporting and empowering the people that support girls cricket. And if you look at some of their ED&I, Metro Bank have near parity, gender parity in terms of their workforce, that was really interesting to us. And some of the questions that I've been asking them is, you know, how have you got to that? You know, what proactive steps have you taken to do that? Because, you know, cricket as a sport isn't quite there yet. And so we've got more to do in that space. So yeah, I'd say that there's England Netball, Metro Bank, Initial, Women in Sport. There's plenty of other organisations that we are learning from to inspire inclusion. And I think the key is for us to take all of that, to digest it, and then to really kind of simplify it and understand how we can make that work for cricket.
Thank you, Tessa. It's so interesting, and you know, so many crossovers there between the world of sport and the world of business in terms of you know, the benefits that inclusion can bring to both worlds, but in very similar ways, just put into different contexts. And it's been super interesting to see you know, particularly the last few months, I feel like there's been quite a lot in the press around a sort of a bit of a backlash against D&I, you know, particularly in the United States. And I just think it's you know, it so overlooks all the benefits that, you know, in a business context, but equally translatable into the world of sport in terms of productivity, confidence building, new opportunities, you know, retaining talented people, be that sports players or employees. So you know, I think Alex, you'd probably agree with me there. It's incredibly short-sighted, I think, for businesses.
Yeah, to take that. No. I'd agree, and I think what's really interesting for cricket is that there's give or take 5,000 cricket clubs across England and Wales, and each one of those is unique. So to your absolute description there, Polly, if you take that to each unit that is one of those cricket clubs, that's exactly what we are encouraging them and, you know, being ambassadors of, you know, that management committee, having that conversation, understanding, is that management committee, is it reflective of their local community? Are they engaging with women, with young people? Are they asking the right questions? Are they understanding, you know, and this is real simple stuff, but the treasurer and the chair having a conversation about, you know, are we making the best of our recycling? Are we making, you know, are we, you know, having a conversation with our suppliers? Are we managing our bar or kitchen correctly? All of those small conversations that happen at that community level then level up to, you know, what is the network of, you know, cricket across England and Wales. And the more that we can do to support that and to advocate that, you know, obviously from my point of view, particularly from a gender diversity point of view and inspiring inclusion from a gender diversity point of view, but each of those unique conversations all adds up to that greater sum. And I would completely agree, Polly.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Tessa. And I know we're drawing to the end now, but we had one final question for you. I'm sure you encounter some incredibly inspiring stories of women in overcoming challenges in cricket. And it'd be great if you could share a particularly impactful success story, perhaps highlighting inclusivity's positive influence on the sport.
Yeah, this was a really tough one because there are so many. So I've indulged and chosen three, but I won't go into too much detail. And I just wanted to highlight a couple of stories. And actually, what I didn't want to do was just necessarily just make this my view. So I engaged with a couple of colleagues to ask more broadly. So the first one is actually a young girl called Izzy Fiddler. She plays for Rotherham Cricket Club up in Yorkshire. And she's amazing because she started out in All-Stars cricket. So she picked up a bat and ball for the first time in All-Stars cricket, and she went to a holiday summer camp. And, you know, this could be anybody's daughter, but her story is just lovely. Mm-hmm. And she went for a couple of summers, and even though she was sporty and played other sports, she just found that cricket was that game for her. And she had good support from her family structure, and needed to make a decision, you know, around, you know, do I kind of, and she needed to make a decision ultimately, was this going to be the sport that she wanted to try and progress at? I think, you know, many parents that may be listening to this who have children, at some point, you know, you take your guidance from your child. Is this the one that you want to go for? Is this the one that you want to take seriously? And if it is, we'll be here for you. But actually, you might have to give up a few other things, you know, maybe not going out so much, or, you know, going to training late on an evening or a weekend. It can be quite unsocial. And she decided that was for her. And the thing that I love about Izzy's story is that she made that choice, and, you know, that was hers to do. And she has gone through the Yorkshire system playing county age group cricket, and actually last year she went all the way through the system and played for Northern Diamonds, which was absolutely fantastic. And I think for me, the reason that I highlight Izzy here is that quite often stories like this can be accidental. They happen because we call them kind of happy accidents, rather than actually because of a pathway, because of a structure, and because of a system within sport. And the reason that I highlight Izzy is because my view is, probably for the first time, or certainly in the first time in this modern kind of period while we've been in inspiring generations, she was able to do that because she could see people on the telly, she could see women, she could see international cricketers on the TV, but there was a structure and a pathway and a system there that enabled her to do it, rather than it just being a happy accident. And I think, to your point around where does inclusion come into this, it's fundamental, because otherwise, without inclusion and diversity, without the investment, without the culture, there wouldn't be that system there in the first place. So kind of Izzy is the first one that I would want to draw upon. And if I may, if that's okay, This may be a lesser known woman to people, but I wanted to draw upon Catherine Jelth White, she's the captain of the England Women's World Blind Team, and just absolutely fantastic. And the World Blind Games took place for the first time last year in Birmingham. It was the first time that an England women's cricket team took part in it. And it was really just the fact that even for the first instance that people wouldn't have even known that we had an England women's blind team, that there was a captain, that they'd previous played matches since 2018, and that actually they describe themselves as old hats at this game, at cricket. But for them, the reason that I draw upon Catherine is it catapulted them within the context into a whole new stratosphere, that they were playing cricket for their country, in their country. So it was really lovely just to hear Catherine's story and what the team have been through. And I'll be really honest, it was the first time that we covered it as well. So, you know, there's things that we can always do differently in a game. I'm sure that's the same in business. And the final one, if I may, is a lovely woman called Janvi. And Janvi is a community champion and national programmes activator embarking in Essex. And she's originally from Mumbai and moved over to the UK, I think around 7 years ago. And her role has been to inspire other South Asian women to become volunteers within national programmes and to deliver All Stars and Dynamos cricket. And this is very much harking back to the if you can't see it, you can't be it. And so this was very much around encouraging and creating opportunities for children from South Asian backgrounds and diverse backgrounds in urban communities to pick up a bat and ball and have a go at All Stars and Dynamos. But in order to do that, you need someone in front of you that looks like you, speaks like you. And so Janvi is one of a number of South Asian females that took on that role and have become community champions. So not only have they become the activator role, but Janvi is now advocating and promoting to others to take on that role as well. And her story really inspired me. And there's huge amounts of cricket, community cricket going on in Essex. So when I was thinking about that question and just thinking about three women who inspire me and, you know, reflect kind of where cricket has come from, but more importantly, where it's going, it was those three women that I thought to.
Amazing.
That's very cool and really lovely to finish on such lovely stories from Catherine, Izzy and Janvi. And to I think what I take away from this conversation, and it has been incredibly interesting, as Polly said earlier, is we often talk to clients around inclusion and they ask what is the thing we need to do, there is no thing.
Yeah.
It is a series of steps. It is the way that it is your policies and your procedures, and you will have to start that as your foundation. But as you say, it's all those puzzle pieces that need to fit together with an aim for what is it that you want, what is the impact that you want at the end, and understanding how all of those different puzzle pieces fit. And I think that's, I think, really inspiring to see that is happening. And as you said, everyone will continue to learn, and it will continue to, maybe the picture might change slightly as those puzzle pieces grow.
Absolutely.
But you know, it's so good that that those foundations are in place, and there's a huge amount for people to learn. Well, thank you ever so much. That's all we've got time for today. A big thank you to Tessa for joining us. Please remember to hit the subscribe button for future episodes. If you'd like to find out more about Future Plus or the work and success that ECB is having with inclusion, or have any questions, please visit the links in the description, reach out to us, and we'd love to make this part of a conversation. Thanks all.